morning, everyone. My name is Madeline Stringer. Most of you probably know I'm a member of the congregation. But for those of you who don't, Reverend Spain is away today preaching up north in one of our fellow churches, and she's asked me to take our turn. About once a month, somebody who isn't the minister preaches. And if you don't like what I say, as Pamela McCarthy has often pointed out, you can talk to Bridget, and she'd be very happy to put your name on the list to do a service in the future. Our opening words. Look to this day, for it is life, the very life of life. In its brief span lie all the verities, the realities of our existence, the bliss of growth, the splendor of action, the glory of achievement. For yesterday is but a dream, and tomorrow only a vision. But today, well lived, makes all our yesterdays a dream of happiness, and tomorrow a vision of hope. Look well, therefore, to this day. When life seems heavy and dark and you feel very sad, light a candle. When life seems light and wonderful and you feel like hugging the world, light a candle. Let this flame represent precisely the candle you need to light at this very moment. And we'll have our first hymn. It's number 145, As Tranquil Streams. It occurs to me that I forgot to welcome you all here, which is the most important part. I got all tangled up in telling you to do a service some other day. You are all, of course, very welcome, and particularly the people looking online or later in the week, but especially those of you who struggled in here this morning. This prayer is the Lord's Prayer. I've read it before here, and some people liked it, but this one is translated directly from the Aramaic into English, rather than the usual version, which went from Aramaic to Greek to Latin and then to English. Let us pray. O cosmic birther of all radiance and vibration, soften the ground of our being and carve out a space within us where your presence can abide. Fill us with your creativity so that we may be empowered to bear the fruit of your mission. Let each of our actions bear fruit in accordance with our desire. Endow us with the wisdom to produce and share what each being needs to grow and flourish. Untie the tangled threads of destiny that bind us as we release others from the entanglement of past mistakes. Do not let us be seduced by that which would divert us from our true purpose, but illuminate the opportunities of the present moment. For you are the ground and the fruitful vision, the birth, power, and fulfillment, as all is gathered and made whole once again. And so it is. Our reader today is Denise.
Good morning. There's a child and family psychologist that I follow on social media called Dr. Becky Kennedy, and she thinks, she talks a lot about connectedness and how it's so important for our children and building our relationships, and how many of the day-to-day issues we have in our families with children can be resolved by being more connected. And then I read a piece by Michael Harding in the Irish Times that made me realise we also need to connect more with the 45-year-olds in our lives than the 5-year-olds. So this is by Michael Harding, and marriage is a journey where each one becomes the custodian of the other's dreams. One recent Sunday, I walked into a coffee shop near the pier at Machrae Ryer with the beloved at my side. We were looking for a light snack and noticed colourful woolen hats for sale. And since the day was so windy, we decided to buy one each. I suggested yellow. "It suits you," I insisted. "Okay," she replied, "but what about you?" "I'll take another yellow," I declared. "But that's the two of us in the same colour," she said, not very imaginative. However, it so happened that Easter Sunday was our anniversary. We'd been married 30 years, and so I concluded that at that stage of our life, we were entitled to wear anything we wanted. If you were in a large crowd at a football match, I said, or near the main stage at Electric Picnic, and we got separated, I'd be able to find you just by looking out over the ocean of heads and seeing that yellow hat. "And furthermore," I continued, "a lot of Buddhist lamas wear yellow robes, and sometimes they wear yellow hats shaped like slices of lemon." "These are woolen hats," she pointed out. "What have they got to do with Buddhism?" "I'm just saying that it's an auspicious colour. We could say we wear yellow in honour of the Buddha," I suggested. "We could even start a new brand, the Leitrim School of Yellow Hats. And I could give workshops on indigenous methods of Irish meditation." "I didn't know that there were any indigenous methods of meditation in Ireland," she commented. "There certainly is," I retorted. "It's called dozing." We both smiled, shared an almond croissant, and drank our coffee in silence, and gazed out at the waves that monks once grappled with in leather boats when they came and went from Tory Island in the age of Columbkill. Then we set out across the flat apron of sand beneath the wild Atlantic sky and walked a long time without speaking. Walking across a beach where the wind limits conversation to hand signals is a good metaphor for marriage. It's a shared solitude, a journey where each one becomes the custodian of the other's dreams, a kind of rapture in the wind as the roaring waves make a music that has no meaning beyond its own sublime nowness. When I was young, I thought that love was a serious thing, like the longing for beauty at the door of every dance hall, like whispering a girl's name at the mirror in adolescence, or writing her address on small envelopes, or falling asleep beneath the scent of her scarf. Love was always the lure of another universe, something transcendent that manifested in the intimacy of another person's body. Love was something I longed for so desperately that I blundered for years as a young man. I bought gifts for girls I worshipped. I bought a necklace for one, and for another I bought a jewellery box. And yet another, I went to a flashy restaurant in a taxi when I was a student and spent £70 on dinner, which at the time was 2 months' rent money. And I always failed by talking too much or being too serious, never appreciating anyone until it was too late and we were standing in some airport saying farewell. Being too serious and lacking a sense of humour was my downfall, as if love could be explained or understood. But at 30, I suddenly became aware of that moment between the moon that poets speak of, when shadows move and you get the first glimpse of the beloved, and you know that this is how your life will continue forever and that you are not in control. It's not so much that you find the beloved, it's more that the beloved has found you. And then does love reveal itself as nothing remotely rational. It's a childish thing, like dancing on the shoreline or jumping into the wind. After the walk, we stopped off at the Court Hotel in Guidor for lunch. The food was superb and the dining room buzzed. Children ran between the tables and old women on sticks hobbled in to sit with their middle-aged sons or daughters. I was exhausted from walking and said very little, although the trek had been exhilarating with the sky and sea so blue, as the old people say, we were blessed with the weather, not to mention the two lovely hats sitting on the back seat of the car outside. Who could ask for more?
Now, I don't see any children here this morning. At least I see lots and lots of children, but they're all dressed up in adult bodies, so I'm going to do the children's story from here. and maybe some children will look at the web later and see it, hear it. This is called the jaguar and the hummingbird, and for those people who are still children and don't know, a jaguar is something like a leopard, weighs about the same as me or a little more, and a hummingbird is tiny, it's the size of our wren. This is a story told by the people of one of the First Nations in America. One day, a terrible fire broke out in a forest. All the animals were terrified and fled in every direction. Even the jaguar was scared. But then he saw a hummingbird flying in the opposite direction towards the fire. Then a minute later, the jaguar saw the hummingbird again, going in the same direction as he was, away from the fire. The bird kept doing this, and the jaguar got very puzzled. "What are you doing, hummingbird?" he asked, "going to and fro like this." "I'm going to the lake," said the bird, "to pick up water in my beak and then bring it to throw on the fire to put it out." The jaguar laughed. "Are you crazy? Do you think you can put out that huge fire on your own with that tiny beak?" "No, I know I can't, but the forest is my home. It feeds me and shelters me and my family. I'm grateful for that. And I help the forest grow by pollinating its flowers. I am part of her and the forest is part of me. I know I can't put out the fire, but I must do my part." At that moment, the forest spirits who heard the hummingbird were impressed by its words, and they sent a torrential downpour, which put out the fire. So Native American grandmothers would tell this story to their grandchildren and end with, "Do you want to attract miracles into your life? Do your part. You have no responsibility to save the world or find the answer to all the problems, but look after your own small corner of the world. As each person does that, the world saves itself." So we're going to have the next hymn now, and of course it should be "You in Your Small Corner and I in Mine," but that one isn't in our hymn book yet. So we're going to sing a new hymn. It's number 2, "Down the Ages We Have Trod." And we don't sing it much, so I think Josh is going to play the tune through once first.
Thank you.
For my reading, I'm going to read two poems, well, one and a half, really, one whole one and then part of another. The first one is The Summer Day by Mary Oliver. Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean, the one who has flung herself out of the grass, the one who is eating sugar out of my hand, who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down, who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she lifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down into the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I have been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? And now a short piece out of Wordsworth's Ode on the Intimations of Immortality, which gives a slightly different point of view. Our birth is but a sleep and a forgetting. The soul that rises with us, our life's star, hath had elsewhere its setting and cometh from afar. Not in entire forgetfulness and not in utter nakedness, but trailing clouds of glory do we come from God, who is our home. Heaven lies about us in our infancy. Shades of the prison house begin to close upon the growing boy. But he beholds the light and whence it flows, he sees it in his joy. The youth who daily further from the east must travel still is nature's priest, and by the vision splendid is on his way attended. At length the man perceives it die away and fade into the light of common day. Let us pray. This poem is actually written by a friend of mine, Phil Lynch, who is an excellent performance poet and can be found on YouTube and such places. He's in my writing group. He wrote this for a grandchild who was probably doing confirmation or some such passage of thoughts, but I think this works for everybody. And it isn't the best of Phil's poetry. Some of it is superb. After this, we'll have a period of silence for you to contemplate the words or whatever you like. And that'll be ended by a song called Patterns of Life, written and sung by another friend of mine, Annabel Duff. Pathway. The truth that shows in you today will grow to guide your journey's way and spread a glow for all who care to follow on your path, to share your love of life, your light of love. So let it bloom to rise above the trips and tricks that try to block your progress on the track you walk. So be yourself in all you do. Stay special just by being you.
Turning, spinning, bending, swaying to and fro.
called this address Believe or Think, mostly to confuse the people walking past and wouldn't know what it was about. Believe is an odd word, often used nowadays with a new meaning. It is overused, often by politicians who say such things as, I believe that our policies will improve everything, when what they mean is, I think, or I hope, or even, this is arrant nonsense, but vote for me anyway. We are taught to believe as children. The luckier ones are told about the tooth fairy, amongst others. So a small child of 5 or 6 has her first wobbly tooth and now believes that the fairy will buy it if it is left in the designated place. Under an upturned glass on the kitchen table, in my case, the fairy didn't like messing about with pillows in the dark. But then the tooth falls out, and lo and behold, the fairy pays up. Does this gap-toothed child believe in the tooth fairy? No, she knows. She's certain. There is a tooth fairy. Less lucky children are told a lot of stuff about their religion of birth and are asked to believe it, which they mostly do. But the proof never arrives. They have to go on believing or stop. Most of you will have driven some sort of path wobbling between the two options of belief because you were told to believe or unbelief because there has been no proof. But there is a third way. Some of us have found, I think. I am one of those. Maybe I've come to this because as a child I was never asked to believe anything. And I remember the moment at just 4 of the loss of belief in the one thing I had ever believed. What I think about the world and life and death comes from observation and reading and occasionally from gut feelings. I've told some of you this story already, but for the others, here goes. Years ago, I was in a roulet-routier restaurant in southern France having a cheap and cheerful lunch. We'd finished our main course, and I said to my husband, order me the chocolate mousse, I'll be back, and set off to the loo. Roulet-routier are often shabby buildings, and in those days, this one had a dark, narrow corridor leading down a gentle slope to the toilets. There was light coming into the end of the corridor at the left. As I went along, I found myself walking a bit taller, settling my breathing, throwing my shoulders back a little. This lasted for about 10 paces. I was at the end, and the light on the left was from the window above the toilet cistern. I felt a wave of disappointment. Mad, of course. I'd come to the loo, and there it was, so what was the problem? I sat on that toilet and asked myself, what was I expecting? I closed my eyes, and after a moment, I saw it, an expanse of sand, and further away, thousands of people sitting on the stone steps of an arena. I sensed heat and cheerful noise. I had thrown myself into a distant past. My feelings walking down that dark sloping passage were those of an entertainer about to go on stage. I recognized it from my amateur drama experiences. I assume that the reason this happened is that the slope, the dark, and the light from the side exactly recalled a passageway I had walked along somewhere in the bowels of an arena of the Roman Empire. And for those of you who don't really get it, that little things like that can cause a memory. Yesterday I had a tomato sandwich and suddenly the scent of the tomato just burst into my head and I was sitting by an Italian roadside having a picnic age 7. So it's the same sort of thing. This was my first hint that I might have lived before. I've learnt regression therapy since then and have visited that ancient North African life in more detail, so I can tell you it seems that I was a comic juggler, the warm-up man before the gladiators came on. So, do I believe in reincarnation? No. But do I think it's a possibility? Yes, I do. After I published my novels, both with past life themes, a few people have said to me, I don't believe in reincarnation. That's fine. It's utterly ridiculous, of course. But why are these people using I don't believe? Did anyone ever ask them to believe in past lives so that this lack of belief is a repudiation? Probably not. Our whole society is based on our one wild and precious life, and life isn't a dress rehearsal. There is little to fight against. And as Unitarians, we use reason after all. But I didn't use reason to come to my opinion about reincarnation. I started by using my own experience, as real in feelings as any I've had in my present life. But then I found out other things that firmed up my thoughts. The first is that regression therapy, visiting the past, can cure. In other words, a person may have an inexplicable problem, one that will be called irrational, claustrophobia, for example. We probably all have a little of this as a protection against idiocy. After all, only a few people take up potholing. But some people get the screaming abdabs when asked to lie still in an MRI tube, even though they know rationally that there are staff there to ensure their well-being and that they could probably wriggle out of the machine if they had to, as there is no locked door. Those people, if regressed to the initiating cause of the problem, will usually find a this life or past life experience that explains it, from being walled up and left to die, getting trapped by landfall or collapsing building, or simply being the butt of some childish prank. About half of people will find the problem in a story that does not belong in this life. Once proper energy work is done by an experienced therapist, the cause of the fear can be left in the past where it belongs. Unfortunately, it's not enough just to see the cause, you have to do the work. The other thing is the evidence. Once I began to think reincarnation might be how things work, I read with interest cases of people who've experienced past lives so recent that they've been able to be investigated. You may have heard of Jenny Cockle, an English woman who had dreams of dying in Ireland, leaving a young family. She found those children then in their 70s, and they were all featured on a Late Late Show when they said that they did accept that Jenny was their late mother. A Dr. Jim Tucker has researched a number of cases in which children who report such things as dying in a previous time and has been able to check the information about the previous lives lived. Others have claimed to have debunked his work, but I find their debunkings at least as incredible as Dr. Tucker's cases. You can check for yourselves and see what you think. One famous case is that of James Leininger. James was born in 1998 and was just under two when, after a visit to an aviation museum, he started having nightmares and saying, "Airplane crash on fire," and "Little man can't get out," and crashing his toy plane's nose first into the table. Over time, he told his parents he'd been shot by the Japanese and that his plane, a Corsair, had flown off a boat. He gave details which were not shown to him in the museum. He said that the boat was Natoma. It turns out there was a USS Natoma Bay, which was involved in the Iwo Jima area. When they asked little James who the little man was, he only said, "Me," or "James." The only pilot to be lost off the Natoma Bay was a James Huston. Further inquiries made it seem quite likely that the modern child had been James Huston. Now, one can say this is all fantasy or made up for attention by the parents, but all they got out of it was the profits off the one book they published, hardly worth years of dissembling. And as they did not start off as people who believed in reincarnation, being from an evangelical Christian background, they probably risked a good deal of mockery. Many stories have not been publicized. I have a friend whose daughter, when very young, asked one day, "Where are my other daddies?" My friend assumed the child was referring to her uncles and told her Uncle Tom and Uncle Paul were at their own houses. "No," said the little girl, "not them, my seven other daddies." Many very young children come out with stuff like this, but as their parents don't recognize the questions for what they are, they give some irrelevant answer. And after a few attempts, the child stops asking. I am as convinced by some random things that happen during the sessions I facilitate. One person doing a past life regression just for curiosity found himself in the life of a monk. It seemed to be a Nepalese or Tibetan situation. But the beliefs were not Buddhist. This appeared to be from an earlier time. My client said that he, the monk, was feeling hungry, so I said, "Go forward in your memory in time to when you next eat." And there was a pause, followed by an expression of surprise. "I thought it would be rice," he said, "but it's a bowl of little bits of fatty meat." These are the convincing moments, when the client sees what they didn't expect. And by the way, regression clients do not find themselves in the lives of royalty. They are mostly serfs and foot soldiers, ordinary people just as we are. To me, there are only two rational explanations for the big questions of why we are here and what it's all about anyway. One, the materialist viewpoint, is that our distant ancestors crawled out of the slime by accident, fought their way to the atom bomb and TikTok, and will cease to exist when they take their last breath. Life is all we have. There's no purpose to any of it, and all we can do is be nice to ourselves and others while we're here. The other explanation that I think is possible is that we have all been here before and will be again, and that there is a purpose to our doing this. Annabel's song is saying this, I hope you could hear the words, that we can't see the pattern of our existence because we are in it, but if we could rise above it and look down, it would become clear. So I'm not going to try to explain to you how it's all organized or who or what is in charge. I don't think we can possibly know. We're far too small and ignorant. Imagine an ant gets into the church and finds itself at the foot of one of the legs of the table. Do we expect it, by smelling the table leg, to divine how flowers are grown, how the pottery or glass of the vase is made, how the vase got filled with water? We are that ant, but we jump to all sorts of conclusions about the very existence of vases of flowers on inexplicable tables. Our ant-like ancestors sat around, maybe in groups, or maybe after breathing in some interesting smoke, and wrote books that explain it all. Some of these books are now considered to be the word of God, whatever that is. I don't believe that there is a person watching over me, but I think it's possible. Call it God or guardian angel or spirit guide as you will. Also, for what it's worth, I think it's unlikely that this existence is controlled and organized by one all-powerful being. It's far more likely to be being organized by a committee, which would explain a lot. I don't think everything that happened was planned. There are definitely some accidents. But it seems to me at least possible that we are all here to try to improve ourselves with some sort of plan about how we will do that. And some of us are allowed to bring talents with us that we've been working on over several previous lives to smooth our path. I don't remember learning to read. I could do it fluently at 5, and reading was a great comfort to me in my lonely childhood. Others are called prodigies for being able to play instruments at very young ages. Maybe these are souls who've been practicing for centuries. In one sense, it is probable that we only live once. I will never be Madeline again. I will not have this body, this brain, this amount of IQ. I'll be in another body with a different amount of intelligence, a different personality and different abilities. I hope I'll be able to sing in tune. But a deeper part of me, my soul, will carry on. This is why thinking that we may all have existed before and will again is so important, and why I hope more people come to think it may be possible. Because if, for example, a Ku Klux Klan member thought he had a good chance of coming back into a life with a black skin next time, he might be less keen on some of his more ghastly activities. If a misogynist knew he could be female next time, he might do something about improving the lot of women. The rich might take actions to improve things for the poor. The same applies for all types of different existence. We have mostly done them all. I certainly remember several male lives and ones in different religions and ethnic groups. I have had some male clients very surprised to find themselves living a female life. For some reason, the women are never surprised to find their men. I don't know why this is. As an aside, in my experience of bringing people through a past life death and into the afterlife, not once has anyone reported that the religion they followed while alive was of any significance once they were dead. I think, I hope, that when I die, I will still be me in some sense and will go off into a future of new experiences, not of reward and punishment, but of new learning and friendship. I really can't go with the traditional option of being in heaven for eternity. Your children crowned all in white shall wait around, as once in Royal David City has it, sounds utterly hellish. If I'm wrong and the materialist option of a black curtain falling is the truth, I have lost nothing and will not know. But if those who choose not to believe in some sort of life after death are wrong, they are going to be a bit confused to find themselves still conscious, as the funeral directors are called. I think I'm going with the easier option. Amen. The next hymn is at number 129, Let Love Continue Long. But before you all get too excited about looking it up, We're going to do the collection a bit differently. Some people have suggested that trying to find your money while singing is very awkward because those people didn't ever think of getting it out in advance. But anyway, we're going to sing the hymn, and then Josh is going to play another verse or two of the music, and we'll do the collection then. The other thing I want to say, as somebody who takes up the collection a lot, if you pay by PayPal and don't want to put anything in the plate, if you simply have no money with you, don't want to put anything in the plate, if you're for some reason don't want to put anything in the plate because you just don't want to, please still touch the plate. Please pass it along to the next person. Too many people stare ahead hoping we won't notice them, but we notice them very much. I was lucky a few years ago to go to Varanasi in India, and I was able to attend the service at 7 o'clock in the evening when they say goodbye to the river, Mother Ganges. There were seven priests in a row doing their stuff, and it was very impressive. And at one point, they passed around the collection basket. It was a big tray, about this size, woven, baskety thing. And I noticed that some people put money, some people put a flower, but a lot of people just touched it. And on it went. And I asked the guide, what was that about? What was the touching? He said, it's a shared blessing. We're sharing it between us. Some people who can afford to put money or a flower, and other people who can't or gave yesterday, touch. And I suggested this to the management committee the other day, and they all thought it was a nice idea. So I thought, let's have that. Let's all just touch these ancient silver plates and share a blessing, while those who want to put some money in the plate. Hymn 129.
Thank you.
our notices. There's fair trade tea and coffee downstairs for everybody. Please come, especially if you're new. There's no charge if you're new. And we can have a chat and you can tell me what you thought of me and hound me out of the place. Bridget still needs some volunteers to read next Sunday. She calls this the favourite readings. And I wonder if the word favourite scares some people because they can't think what their favourite reading is. Really, it just means a reading you think we might like to hear. So she needs about three people. So if you know Bridget's details, contact her. If you don't, let me know and I'll pass on your name. There's some bedding plants just inside the door there at the bottom of the stairs. Please give them homes. If you want to give a donation, that would be great. This is all to go towards our new lights. At 1 p.m, Shari is giving a recital in the church. It's free of charge and everybody is welcome. So our final hymn is 169. For no reason at all except to be cheerful, we shall overcome. Take courage, friends. The way is often hard. The path is never clear. The stakes are very high. Take courage, for deep down there is another truth. You are not alone. Amen.